founder. I'm the founder and CEO of VidMob. So it's ironic that we're here today to talk about whether or not AI is a threat to marketers, because in a lot of ways, this is actually where I started VidMob. So in 2014, I read a post by a guy named Kai-Fu Lee, who was then leading Google in China, and he talked about how you could analyze which businesses were going to be most impacted by AI, most threatened by AI, by constructing a four-quadrant matrix, with the axes being creativity and empathy. And so this is one of those matrices where in the lower left corner, those that index towards low empathy, low creativity would be the most vulnerable to AI, and those that index into the upper right quadrant, high creativity, high empathy, were going to be the ones that were least vulnerable to AI. And so in that upper left corner, upper right corner, were sort of creative jobs. And one of the things that I was thinking about at that time in my career was how to build a more purpose-driven business. And I was attracted to this idea that jobs, labor, was essentially the root of human dignity. And at the same time, I was also interested in this idea that we were sort of progressing through into a third epoch in human communications. So in a lot of ways, for tens of thousands of years as a culture, we've communicated orally. And then since the Gutenberg printing press, the last 500 plus years, we've communicated through text and images. And in recent times, we've moved into the screen age. So this is how big a transition this actually is. It's the third communication epoch that we've gone through. And so when I looked at that, what sort of struck me was that it was clear that we were going to continue to progress towards more formats. Okay. Even with all the squeaking? Okay. Sorry, I was holding it away because of all the squeaking. So as we progress, what we're going to start to see is more formats, more channels, greater media complexity, and all of this leading towards increased creative difficulty. So in much the same way that the first 25 years of the internet experienced omnipresent payment friction and omnipresent security friction, my view was that going forward, we were going to enter a time where we were going to experience omnipresent creative friction. And I wasn't the only one looking at this, right? So every venture capitalist I talked to in 2014 and early 2015, everyone could see this future. Everyone could see that we were rushing headlong into a new world. But we all had sort of different views on how to solve that problem. And so as is often the case with technology investors, the prevailing view at the time was, let's try to optimize and build out all of the human involvement. Let's build template creators. Let's build algorithmic editors. Because in their view, the creativity part was the inefficiency that we needed to solve for. That was the problem. And so we actually just had a different point of view, a point of view that I think is more relevant than ever today. And so one of the things that we asked ourselves was, well, what is the goal? What is the long-term goal of a marketer? Is it simply just to get more stuff out there? Because if it is, then sure, template creators, algorithmic editors, that's terrific. But when we asked ourselves that question and when we talked to marketers, what we heard back from them was that the goal wasn't that. It wasn't just about throwing stuff out there into the world. It was about creating uniquely with an audience and that resonated emotionally. That was their goal. And what we see is that we see the same pattern elsewhere, right? A musician's goal isn't just to make a ton of noise. A band's goal isn't just to release thousands and thousands of songs every year. The goal is actually to make incredible music. And the better the music you make, the more fans you have, the more people come to your concerts. And it's the exact same thing for marketers. So this sort of led to us for sort of an early realization. Our realization was that our goal as a company shouldn't be to build technology to scale creativity. Our goal had to be about helping people understand creativity. How do we actually get beyond, hey, this is the ad that works best, or this is how well that ad works? How do we get to a point where we can actually understand why? Why does this ad work and that one not? Why does this ad speak to that audience segment, but not this one. And so this is what we set out to do. And so what this did was it put us on a path of technological development. The first thing we did was we started plugging into the ads APIs of every major ad platform. So first Snapchat, then Meta, then Google, then YouTube, then TikTok, then Amazon, then Reddit, then Hulu, etc. And we started connecting so that we could do two things. First, that we could ingest all of the creative that marketers were running, and second, so that we could pull all the performance information. And then, in 2017, we started working with AI. So we were sort of a little early to this game. But we were amongst the first companies that started using computer vision to actually unpack what's happening inside of an ad. Because at the end of the day, every video, whether it's 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 30 seconds, or 2 hours long, is just a series of frames, and in every frame, things are happening. There's words on screen, or there may not be. There's language that's being spoken. There's objects in the foreground and background. There's emotions on people's faces. All of these things are decisions that we make as marketers, as communicators, to get across a message. And then from there, we're able to pull all the performance data. So all of the clicks and likes and shares and purchases, all of that, and we ended up with two enormous data sets. On one hand, creative decisioning, and on the other hand, behavior. And we were able to cross those two things and start to do really interesting things for marketers. So this enabled us first and foremost as a base level to start being able to actually score content ahead of time and tell a marketer how likely it was to perform on a platform. Is this designed to do well on Meta? Is this designed to do well on TikTok? Because there are very obvious basic things that we can do that actually fit the trend of culture at the time or that don't, and that impacts how people respond. And so this enabled us to basically create base level best practices for the platforms and then get one layer up to best practices for a category, beverages or automotive or e-commerce, and then one layer up beyond that to actual brands themselves. The next thing we did was we realized we can do more than score. We can actually get into analytics. And so we essentially invented a new category. We called this creative analytics, but for a long time we called it creative intelligence. And so this was actually the science of understanding how individual decisions impact behavior. And this led to more sophisticated ways to develop custom rules for brands so we could actually help them understand their own best practices for their own audiences. And what this did was it started to give us incredible data. Data that gave us clues into the way that people responded to things. And so in this particular example here, this was working with a cruise line company, and one of the things that started to pop out was that for people under 30 on Facebook, waterfalls and horses were really important. Now, today, and this is something that you're probably hearing all over the place, we're like, oh, we're just gonna be able to take all this data, throw it into generative AI tools, and off we go. So if we know that waterfalls and horses are great, we can just throw this into Midjourney or Dolly or Firefly or whatever, and here we go, done, case closed, off it goes. But of course, it's not as simple as that, right? And so I want to talk about how we actually use data with humans and why we shouldn't be concerned that led to an actual result for this marketer. Because what's happening here is that there's going to soon be hundreds of generative AI tools. It seems like every week another two or three are announced. We have Firefly and Midjourney and Dolly and et cetera, et cetera. And in a lot of ways, these things are doing the same things. This substantiation layer is already getting commoditized. It's like whether you decide, you know, which type of laptop you choose to use or whatever. There's technology at the end that is important. But what matters is what actually goes into it that takes that commodity tool and turns it into something that drives a result. And so what's happening here is that we're exiting the world that we've been in, a world that was defined by scarcity. For the last decade or so, the central challenge of a marketer has been, how do I create at the speed and scale to fill all the places I need to fill with appropriate content? And that world of scarcity is coming to an end. We are entering into a world of content abundance, content infinity, where you will soon be able to push a single button and your content will be infinitized and fragmentized and to be able to fill everything. And in that new world that starts essentially tomorrow, the central question is not going to be one of scale. It's going to be one of effectiveness. How do I create content that effectively drives the response I'm trying to drive? How do I stand out in a world of content infinity? Again, it's not about making noise. If you're at a campfire, in that world of scarcity, any person with a guitar is going to sound like John Lennon. But if you're showing up on Spotify and you have to compete with 30 million bands, you better do more than just strum a guitar. And so the question now is, as we have that infinitized substantiation layer, how are we going to get unique output? And ultimately, the answer is through feeding it with unique data. So how do you get to unique data? You build loops. And so the thing that you'll recognize quickly about all these tools, the Dollies, the Midjourneys, the Fireflies, is that they're generally pre-trained. They're pre-trained on scrapes of the internet. They're pre-trained on stock image libraries. Firefly just looks at Adobe's stock image library. And so as a result, they come up with essentially canned responses. But what we know from the AI field is that the best types of models, the most responsive models, the models that deliver the best results are always the ones that are reinforced with human feedback. And so what we've set out to do is construct our own RLHF, our own reinforcement learning model with human feedback at VidMob. And so what this is for us, it's about constructing a human decisioning layer that sits on top of both our base models and our platform. And these things operate in a never-ending cycle, going around and around and around. And so if we dive into that and look at what that actually means in practice, what it is that we have thousands of integrated creators, and every decision they make, deciding to move a logo a little bit left or a little bit right, deciding to move change the shade of this color, deciding to use this logo or that, all of those decisions are captured. All of the creative process, the conversations between clients and editors, going from draft one to draft five, all of the creative insights, the up-leveling of machine data to strategic data is captured. All of the checks, the brand safety checks, the computer vision checks, all of that information is captured and flows into our models, which make them smarter, which then flow over to our platform itself, and this whole thing just goes around and around and around. And so what VidMob has actually constructed is the largest reinforcement learning model for creativity anywhere in the world. It ingests data from every major platform every day, so we have absolute visibility into performance and how culture changes day to day, minute to minute, and it improves at all times. And so now if we go back to that example of the horses and waterfalls, you can actually see a little bit of this process. So that machine data came back and told us that horses and waterfalls were important for people under 30 on Facebook. But when a human strategist looked at this, when a creative analyst looked at this, what she was able to do was to make the strategic leap and say that this isn't actually about horses and waterfalls. What this is about is that for people under 30, they go on cruises because they want to explore the world. They go on cruises because they want to go on adventures. It's not about being on the boat. It's about being off the boat. And so we were able to re-architect this client's creative strategy, and in doing so, we more than doubled the performance of their digital ads. We also saw that for people over 50, what they're looking for is safety, for simplicity. And so we re-architected those ads, and again saw a similar lift. That machine insight, which was useless, valueless, was turned into a strategic insight through a partnership between a human and an AI system. And in doing so, we drove creative effectiveness. And the reality is that data science is creativity. And so whereas we set out to build a creative business to drive creative jobs, we're actually doing that, but maybe not in exactly the way that I thought of when I started the company. And in this AI-first world that we're heading into, that we're already into, the loops that generate unique signals and unique data are going to be the key to future competitive advantage. They may be the only key to future competitive advantage. data and unique data, how your data is different than your competitors, is going to be that important. And so the question that we have here as we think about whether we should be fearful of AI is really, what loops should we be creating? What unique signals can we capture? And most importantly, what new job types can we create that take advantage of these technologies? For us, we've birthed this new job that we call a creative analyst. And we see more and more of our clients putting posts in LinkedIn and other places to hire for that job. This is a job that didn't exist before, and it does now. And so we hear this all the time. AI is going to steal our jobs. I feel like it's on the cover of either Fortune or Time or something pretty much every week. And this is an old refrain. Is AI going to steal my job? The answer is, I think quite simply, it won't. But, and there's a big but here. Someone who uses AI better than you absolutely will steal your job. There is no question about that. This is not the metaverse. This is not Web3. This is the most real thing that has happened in any of our lives. And everything is going to be different from this day forward. And so when we think about whether this is something that we should fear, whether AI is coming for marketers' jobs, I think that the answer probably is yes. But not the same way that we think. We should fear this the same way a farmer feared a plow. Or years later, a farmer feared a diesel combine. These are things that change the way we live and operate and do that forever. There is no going back. But for those of us who embrace it, and I hope that's everyone here, for those of you who lean fully into this opportunity, what lies ahead is a world of incredible opportunity, a world of being better, faster, and more efficient than your competitors, and yes, even a world that's more creative. So thank you for your time. I'm reachable at Colmerica through VidMob, and I appreciate your interest.